John Burke. Mr. Burke, what's your full name? It's John Burke.
Oh, of course. We have it home. Oh, it's being used here. John Burke Jackson. My dad is a Burke, Robert Burke. My mother was Jane Burke, married to Jane Burke. Then my grandmother, my mother's side, was Jackson. So we had it mixed up with very John Burke Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Where was your family? Where was it that you grew up?
Oh, that's another part. I'm a Jamaican.
You're a Jamaican. I remember one day you were over at the school and you were looking through the books on Africa and you were talking about Ethiopia. You had an idea that some part of your family came from Ethiopia.
Well, of course, that's where the colored people are from.
Yeah, from all of Africa, but
that's
it was...
Right.
Is it Ethiopia that you think your particular family came from?
No.
No?
No, that is made up, of course, that was a far distant family.
Mm-hmm.
But I was born down in Jamaica. And my grandmother, also, she was belonged to the slave gang in the early days. She was born a couple months after slavery was being abolished. That's in Jamaica. But my daddy was a Methodist preacher, Robert Burke. Now, we were told that in the early day, there were three white men came from England. Those three white men they went to settle in different parishes in Jamaica. One went to St. Andrews, one to St. Anne's, and one to St. Thomas. So that there were no name in Jamaica by the name of Burke away from those three men. They often remained there for quite a good many years. They get mixed up. Then you see, they got a lot of colored people on it. That's the history we have in the Burke family. Then we had, my daddy had 12 boys, boys and girls, six boys, six girls. Well, my brother, the first one, was Alexander Burke. Alexander Walden John. Well, he travels all around, often left Jamaica, and he went to British Honduras, Guatemala. He was known down those places as a noble speaker, because if you should ask for a Burke down there, very few people know him. You got to say the noble speaker, he was such a popular man. Well, he died down in Guatemala in British Honduras. Well, touching on myself, are you on the history of those boys?
Well, not so much about them, except if you want to tell a specific story.
That's right, that's right. But about myself. Well, I came to the school in Jamaica, and after left school, well, I went the first place, I think that was in 1919, I went to Cuba.
How did you get to Cuba?
Well, I go by boat. Cuba is about 90 miles across from Jamaica to Cuba.
How old were you then? 19.
At that time?
Mm-hmm.
I was 19.
You were born in 1900?
Yes, 1901.
What was your birthday?
Well, my birthday was the 9th of August, I was in July. That same year.
Okay. So as you were growing up, were you lived with your parents and your father was a Methodist?
Preacher.
Did he take his training in Jamaica?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were living in was it a small community or a big city or what?
No, in a small community, in the parish of St. Andrew.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you went to school?
Yeah.
and grew up. And then at the age of 19, what made you decide to go to Cuba?
Well, because the rest of the boys are doing it.
Boys in your family or boys?
No, boys of friends.
Uh-huh. Why did they go to Cuba?
Because in those days it was a big day in Cuba. You get plenty of money.
Lots of work and plenty of money.
Lots of work and plenty of money.
And what kind of work was that?
Well, all kind of work. A man works in railroads, he works in the farm, cutting cane, you work in the factory, in all different places. I worked chiefly in the factory and in the railroad department.
What kind of work did you do? What kind of a factory was it?
Well, the sugar making.
Processing. Okay, so you got there. Were you afraid to leave home, or were you excited? How did you feel when you left Jamaica?
If I was afraid?
Yeah. Were you afraid about leaving Jamaica, about leaving your family?
Not at all. It was
strong young man.
It was a joy then, because you see, we wanted to know something about the outside. Uh-huh. Well, I had me 10 years in Cuba. Popular days they were.
And did you like it?
Yes, I did. I did those days.
What kind of work? Where did you live? Did the companies find you places to live, or did you?
Well, yes, the companies always prepared places for us, the people.
And were they good places? Were you comfortable?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. The first place I went to was a pueblo called Calabasa. Sugar factory, and they had all the houses properly laid out. Then the big railroad from there going to Havana. That's from Santiago. We landed in Santiago de Cuba. Then I go on to Calabasas. I worked there for a period. And I went to another city they call Jobabo. And from Jobabo, I went off to, let me see. There's another city, pueblo, they call Baguanas. And there I joined in with the, we had an association in those days, they called UNIA. You heard about that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was secretary there for quite a few months in Havana.
Was that the first that you had joined the UNIA?
Yes, first time.
Was your family a member of the UNIA in Jamaica?
No, that's not down Jamaica. They were. You see, there were older people and they didn't get down to that, you see.
The UNIA was something new at that time.
Well, really, well, it's something new. Mm-hmm. Garvey's days.
That was when Garvey was still living then.
Yeah, still living he was the organizer of that Universal Negro Improvement Association.
So about what year was that you became involved with UNIA?
Well, that was in 1925.
You were still a young man?
Yes, at the time. I was still a young man.
What were the ideas in that program? What were the ideas behind the UNIA?
It was a big one. More than what I can tell you now. It was to organize the Negro people to have one substantial idea of who they are, where they're from. Mm-hmm. Because they're being hidden by the other people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Garvey gave us a lot of lessons, let us understand the position that we were, because we were told in the early days that the colored people were people very much inferior. Mm-hmm. But Garvey goes on to get the history from Africa, and then we find out that the Negroes were losing the world before. Mm-hmm. But it goes through the waywardness to Garvey, see, they turned them down. It was turned down, sin came in, and they were taken away like Israel, a slave. That was how a certain amount of the people came to Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, and all around the West Indies. So Garvey, he came in to let us understand more about ourselves, and it really didn't hurt. More of what I can tell you now. It's a big history.
I'm interested to hear anything that you have to say about it, because it's this sort of thing You understand that the children in this school right now, they don't have an understanding of that either.
That's about it.
And it's by talking about things like this that the children here can learn something about their history too.
Their history.
So anything that you can recall to of the lessons that you learned and the history that you learned in the UNIA, it would be wonderful if you could tell me and we can put it right down and let the children take a look at it.
Now, as I said, we have the first man who was Garvey, and at least we have three of the most important Negroes. We had Barrister Smith, and we have Barrister Manley. Those men were all colored men. Mr. Manley went to England some time ago and won a tremendous case there. Mr. Smith also, when I came here in Costa Rica, I was working with the United Fruit Company in Monteverde Branch. You know anything all the way down there?
Mm-hmm.
That's the Monteverde Branch in those days. And we had a man in the name of, what is his name? De Gravel.
De Gravel?
De Gravel. De Gravel.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. He was a superintendent of the United Fruit Company in those days. And when De Gravel get down to Cavite to Monteverde Branch, he gets into the car where the banana being loaded. And he take all this bunch and throw it away. Take all that bunch and throw it away. Take that bunch and throw it away. Give it a name, you know, call it a name. And then he pick up a bunch and he couldn't find a name for it. Party said, I don't like it. Outside. And the people suffered a great deal. Within that period, they had a company in Jamaica that wanted us to buy out the banana business there. It was read in the Legislative Council two times. And the last time, if it had been read, it would become law and it couldn't change. Well, I got some papers in Jamaica that we call it plain talk. And I took, if I could have time, I could show you that copy also. I wrote a letter to the Plain Talk office in Jamaica, Kingston, and tell them that every Jamaican at home and abroad should protest against that act, saying all that banana copy. Because even the attempt to pay more than what is being paid there now, at the same time, the rejection in the future but worse in the past, from what I've seen the governor did here. And I appealed to one of the most prominent men, Barrister Smith and Barrister, what's his name again? Did I call his name a while ago? Smith and, get away from me right away. But anyway, those two gentlemen, those were both prominent men.
Those were both men in Jamaica?
Yes.
Lawyers.
Lawyers they were, yeah. And they had it made up, and in the long while, it was abolished. They didn't get by.
Oh, yeah?
I wouldn't know where to find that paper now that could show you a copy of it, but that was so. Okay.
But this was the sort of activity that the UNIA would also have supported, because it was, is that why you were talking about this? Because the UNIA wanted to push for the improvement of the of all of the Negro race.
Most the same.
And so this was a way that the Negro race was being held down, and you were trying to object against that.
Most the same.
And so the UNIA would take on causes like that and fight them for the.
Well, they did the way that you could understand how to manage it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Plain Talk, was that a newspaper put out by the UNIA?
Yes, that was not by UNIA. We had a different press down at Plain Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the UNIA had a newspaper they called I think I have a copy of it here, but I don't know where to find it right now. that I did used to read in those days. The plain talk is a different place.
But that was in Jamaica?
Yes, it was.
What other kinds of... Go ahead. What other kinds of programs was the UNIA offering in Cuba at that time when you first joined it?
Well, they had they only wanted to bring the Negroes there to get it to understand what's about the history and to expect a better future. Mm-hmm. They had plans laid out for better education.
How were they going to help with the education?
Well, of course, they had in Liberia. Liberia was a substantial country in Africa where all the most intelligent Negroes in Jamaica went to get a certain amount of training in Liberia. And they were going to build a Liberia as in the first independent republic. And it is the first independent republic. By the assistance of the American people, because the American people helped Liberia to become, I think, the first independent republic in Africa after the danger days, you know? And that's where they get the start. But outside of that, in the same Jamaica, Barbados, they have the teachers made up to give a better education than what had been given before.
That's good.
Yeah. So, well, after I left Cuba, I went on to Nicaragua.
Why did you finally decide to leave Cuba?
Well, because they were expecting a big revolution there.
When was that?
That was in 1930. Let me see, 1928. Yes, 1928 I left there.
And it was before a revolution started?
They were expecting to. That was in Menico days. President Menico was at the time. And after I left, they had a big revolution there in Machado days. Well, I left Cuba. I came to, I went to Puerto Cabeza, that's in Nicaragua. I worked down there with a company as a pruning foreman in the farm, you know.
As a what?
Pruning foreman, pruning bananas. Worked pruning bananas.
Where did you learn about bananas? Had you worked with bananas before?
Oh, yes, we have bananas down the west in Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
And I learned it, even in cultivation, I get more learning about it in Monte Verde Ranch. So when it comes to the pruning of banana, I'm an expert in that. Oh yeah.
Well, was that United Fruit Company?
No, United Fruit Company, sure. United Fruit Company. So when I came over from Cuba, yes, I went to Nicaragua. Was working in Puerto Cabeza, that is the port. Then down in the line, we worked at a place they call. Ballock Farm. We worked in that farm. I worked at Brown's Camp. And then after that, I decided to leave Puerto Cabeza. And I took the launch from there. The launch name was Linda Hess. Linda Hess. Belonged to a man, the name of Sergeant. Captain Sergeant, and we sail on to Le Mans. When we get in that port the night about, we left about 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the evening, about 2 o'clock, sister, we had a storm. And it was as such that I lay down on the deck, just make up my mind to die.
Mm.
But it happened one of the sailors walk around and say, you better hold on properly there, lest you get overboard. So I hold on to one of the long rope and go down, hold, and I said, now if anything happened, the boat got to go down with me. And we did get over to Port Lamont. Well, I stayed in Port Lamont one or 2 days. Then I took another launch in there, they call it Anachikuna, right on to Kalan. And from thence we get another launch on to Puerto Valdivia.
Where is that?
That's the eastern end of Panama, near to Colombia. Or on the same run to Cherokee, Puerto Valdivia. Well, I worked there with one overseer German, the name of Mr. Blash, as a stockman.
What does it mean to be a stockman?
Oh, that's to look after the horses and mules and so on.
Is this still for United Fruit Company or for?
Yes, United Fruit Company. It's in United Fruit Company. And I had a very good time there. Because one night we had a party there with Mr. Blash and all the overseers and down the farm. And they were drinking beer all the way all night. And Mr. Blash and I got two bottles, a glass. So I'm showing him how we drink beer. As he ever made to take a sip and we talk. And Mr. Blash said, now I'm going to show you how we drink beer. And he put it up and he threw the whole glass and finished.
And that's how the Germans drink beer.
That's how the Germans drink beer. But there was one thing about it too. In those days, I was not known as Burr. All those traveling around, it was after I became stationary, then I took over the name Burr. I was known in those days as John Jellicoe.
John Jericho?
Jellicoe.
Jellicoe. Why was that? Was that a...
Well, because I like that name.
You just took that, John Jellicoe.
Yes. Yes.
How did you spell that?
J-E-L-L-I-C-O-E.
John Jellicoe.
Yes, sir. I've got books in here to write down on it, too. I had a book here, a workbook that I had in Bradsman, I think it was. Yeah. That carries that name also. John Jellicoe. Well, when I returned after spending a couple months in Puerto Valdivia, then I said I returned back because I didn't like Puerto Valdivia. So I returned back to Costa Rica. I came from Costa Rica, from there, Puerto Valdivia, back to Le Mans.
Do you remember what year that was?
Yes, just a minute. Not from, I came from Puerto Valley to Colón, and from Colón to Bogotá, Tora. That was in 1927. I had a recall of it too. Because, yes, it was, I left there at 28. Now, that was about the 30s. 1930.
Okay.
That's right, 1930. Now, I came over to Port Lamont after stayed about 10 months in Bocas del Toro. And I came down to Lamont and I went down to Sicarius, and I walk around until I get a good job with the same United Fruit Company down in Indiana Branch. I worked down in Indiana Branch as a foreman with one Mr. Amy, who was overseer, and one Mr. Steadman, who was foreman. Also in another farm, I think he's still living in Sicarius, Stedman. Well, I was there until I left there, and I came down here on this land to Bananiche. I worked with one Mr. Ralph, there's a foreman, but I already heard about one Mr. Ralph died some time ago, some months ago.
I don't recall.
That's right. I worked with him for quite a while, and I went back to the mall. Well, I went in the lines now. At the time, the Abaca taking up the contract, the new company. Well, I worked with the Abaca quite a good many years as a foreman. And then I got paid off, that was in 1945, I think, or 46. Yeah. And I got paid off. I went to Germania, the old lines. I met a little girl there named Edda Lyons, and I did marry her, 46. We lived there, and I went doing farming.
Did you have your own property then, your own farm?
No, I had a certain amount of land that I do cultivate, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was there, I had a friend down here in Coweta, and they said if I would get down to Coweta, they give me a property to manage, Cocoa Farm. So I told the wife of the time, Hedo, yes, let's do it. Then that was in 1949, about April. We came down to Coweta. That Jackman house, that Law's house by the corner in front of the Endopolisy House building office, that home.
On which side of
this side?
Where Laura lives now.
I don't think so. I don't
Mr. Johnson's house?
No, not Johnson's house, the one next to it.
Yeah?
No, not the one next to it. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why.
Yeah, that one.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah, that would be that fitment of living. Well, I managed that farm for quite a few years. Until he died, I gave it up. Well, that wife, of course, she became rude, and I put her away.
How did that happen? I don't understand.
Well, rude, that is to say, do things that should not be done.
Uh-huh. And so what did you do?
I put her away by writing a bill of divorce. Then I marry another woman from Germany with the same old line, whose name was Blanca Davis.
I remember her well.
Did you?
Sure.
Well, let's see. Well, it happens, it's just as life goes, she died. Then I go to marry this Miss Wiley Campbell. It's coming on to now.
Tell me when you first came to Puerto Limón, mm-hmm. What was the place like?
Sister, the place was very hungry.
Awesome.
Very hungry. Yeah. You know, I never forget. I have it up in history.
It's good.
When I get to Limón. I get off the train. I went to a hotel that looks like the hotel that we're accustomed to in Cuba. I'll never forget that statement. And when I went in to ask for a room to stay in, I saw a white-haired woman came down. She looked at me and she said, "No, we don't admit Negroes here. Country people here." And when I looked in the canteen and I saw two young men, colored men they were, working. And I said to them, "If I were like you boys, I wouldn't work here." and they gave me a three-quarter smile. That was all. And I left. And I went to another hotel they called Caballo Blanco. And I stayed there until I did get out and go on the land.
Do you remember the name of the hotel? The Park Hotel. The Park Hotel?
Park Hotel.
They said they wouldn't take anyone?
That's right. That was in 1929. Yeah. Never forget that statement. The hotel, it looks like the hotel that we are accustomed to.
Sure.
But the rest of the hotel, they were on their faces because they have what you call permanent hotel in Cuba. I mean, Lemon is nowhere to compare some of the things in Cuba. Well, on the other hand, when I do get down to get a Caledon, that was an article because the bridge they had there washed away in 1928. They got a big river. Then you get off from that bridge at Pennhurst. They had a boat to carry across, and when you get over there, you got a tram car. That's Mr. Kerry Horsey. You know Kerry Horsey, didn't you?
No.
Clarence?
Mr. Clarence, yeah.
Yeah, but he was one of the carmen there, and at St. Luther on. They were the carmen there, and sister. When you get on that car at 11 o'clock, you know, the train, get in that car, you never get a Caledon very often until 4 o'clock. Now those are the bitter days. Sometimes the cars don't get on the track four or five times. The tram is no good. They have men there doing a little work on it, but that's no good. It was rotten. Then those two men carrying the car, they haven't even got no shade. Sometimes the people coming out with babies, wet all the way down to Caledon.
What a problem.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we're not running out of
That's
tape.
Right.
Okay.
But it so happened that they went a little, they went thinking a little bit, and they make up a little shed, you know, that could keep all some of the water, every beating of the rain, to help the situation coming out. Well, we undergo that hardship for quite a good many years, until, I forget what year that was, they start the highway from Puerto Bay, and they get up to Caledon. When that is being done, now they start to take up from Caledon to Pennhurst. That was another thing. They had a tram car out there. When you get from Caledon going up, you got to walk it in mud and water to get the tram at a certain distance, then it take you on to Pennhurst because they're putting up, they're making the road, you know, going up. It wasn't easy, sister. Sometimes I was sorry for some of the women and the children walking through that mud and water. But as it said, after a storm, there comes a calm. And so the road is being made on till they get to Pennhurst. And they had it all right. But up to the time when we rode over there for not a couple more years, we had the crossing of the river. That was another terrible road. It gives me heartbeats when I got to go across here with Blanca, because she was so nervous, you know. Mm-hmm. One day I said to her, no, but you see, take it easy, man. Look, all the people are going across, not. You'll go across like them, too. But anyway, she was a bit nervous that way. Until, hallelujah, it was so said, they're going to start the bridge. That she never did live to see that much. And that's how it is today. We can get to run from Caledon right to Limon, and afterwards to Limon to San Jose, the same day. So the improvement is wonderful. But it's to know, when you consider the tram line, that modern water, please now it's wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, the improvement is wonderful. Then away from that, they start to improve on the Pueblo. I think it was in 1974.
All over again. Mr. Gray, you were just starting to tell me how long it is you've been here.
Well, 1914.
From 1914 you've been in Puerto Viejo?
Yes. Go and come back. But from around 1920, 1920s, I came here and lived.
Okay, tell me first, you told me you were 89 years old. Tell me what year you were born.
August 1888.
And what was the day?
28th of August.
Okay, and your full name is Ciro?
Gray.
Campbell. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Tell me, where were you born?
Jamaica.
In Jamaica?
Yes.
Where in Jamaica?
St. James.
St. James Parish?
Yes, Parish of St. James.
I just talked with another man from Coweta who was born in St. James Parish, Mr. Slack in Coweta.
Yeah, I know him all right.
Yeah. Did you know his family in Jamaica?
No, I know him here.
But, okay, you were born in St. James Parish. Did you live in a city or the country?
The country.
What kind of a life did you have there?
Agriculture.
What, for cane? Sugar cane?
No, banana.
All banana? Did your father own a small farm with banana? Or?
Yes. But he died when I was a small boy, just about 13 years old.
So, did you have a large family?
Three of us. Two brothers and one sister.
And so when your father died, what did you do?
Well, I assisted the old lady and my bigger brother with the bananas and steel tree, and then I learned I was a shoemaker in my young days. Yes, that was what I was. I used to help him around in the farm, you know, but I didn't like it. You know, farming is a hard thing when you're young. Not everybody likes it. Not like Noah becomes a lover of farm.
You love farming?
Ah, yes.
Huh.
I've tried many other businesses and I'm not successful. It's the only thing that I'm successful is to till the soil. Hmm.
But when you were young, you didn't like it?
No, I didn't like it. I was a shoemaker from around 14 years old, and I lived home when I was 21 years old, and I've been in Wabito, on the Panama side, and I used to work on my trade over there, shoemaker, until I quit and went and turned a stockman over there.
Well, let's take that a little slower. I want to know why it was that you decided to leave Jamaica. Why did you decide to go?
Well, I just feel like leaving. I didn't like to stay home no more.
How
I don't want to travel.
How many years did you have then?
About 21 years when I came here. I came to Panama, from Panama to Guavito, and from Guavito I came over here.
Uh-huh.
I just like to travel.
And you could make a living with your trade as a shoemaker?
Yes. Those days things were very cheap. Materials were cheap, the labor was cheap, the cost of living was very small. Not like now.
So you made your way into Costa Rica as a shoemaker. And when you came into Costa Rica, you were at Guavito, and then you said you came over on this side.
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was around 14. Came here 1914. Same year the war broke out.
And what was the place like then?
Huh?
What was the place like then? What was Puerto Viejo like?
Poor. Very poor. When I came here, the cost of living here was very small, but there was no money. I came here and I worked for 2 colones and 50 cents a day when I started to make farm. And I started my farm in Mount Creek, and I used to work for 2 colones and 50 cents per day while I was working myself. Came here with a little money from there, but that could not keep me. I had to do something. Cost of living was very small, not like no. But today everything is at top price, everything is high. Labor is high, wages is high. You can't scarce get labor right now.
Well, when you came to Costa Rica, did you start making shoes then?
They didn't do it again.
Sometimes I go a little repair when I go to Lebanon, and I had a friend there, and I stay there a week and I'm just assisting. But me personally, no.
Oh, but I remember, sometime if I have a shoe that needs repair, maybe I bring it by here.
Can't see good. Can't see good, no.
Well, so you came, and first you stayed down by Home Creek.
Yes, they were living for years. My farm and everything is up there. Came here was about 20 years since I found out over here, living right here. But I still go to Home Creek. Don't you know my son, Alfred?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Two of them, one in Lemon.
And so that's your original farm, the farm that he has in Home Creek?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
I was living this side. When you see his house, he's over that side, the high house. I was living on this side.
Mm-hmm. When you got that farm, did you have to, was that bush or was it already a farm that you bought?
No, I made it. I bought a little piece, but river take it away.
A high river?
Yes, one quick. Bought about a tarry of coconut, only a couple of sleeves to know. Cut it up, it was a long pint and it was cut it up.
Did that happen long time ago? Or?
Oh, yes. And there's somebody occupied over that side now, and it's bearing cocoa, fruit trees bearing too. See, the river cut from this side and so on the other side.
Uh-huh. So all those things change up now?
Oh, yes. All things change.
Was it one big flood that carried it away?
About two or three.
Two or three. Were floods, did they have a lot of bad floods back in those old days? Did they have a lot of bad floods in those old days?
Yes. You know, I see one great flood that they came and raw from the right where that the bridge was seeing a break on that shop over that side. From there right over to the beach here. Just a little way from the beach, come and make a raft and two or three men come straight here and one flood from home to right.
Were there things that you remember from those old days, stories or jokes that the people used to tell? Were there any big jokes on, like, do you know any jokes on Mr. Mason or any of the other folks?
He's more keen at that time. I don't know. He has a memory that is exceptional.
Does he?
He remembers. Sometimes I could only refresh my memory, telling me about so and so and so and so. He don't forget nothing for me here. For me was small.
That's a wonderful gift. Mr. Johnson in Kawita has a memory like that.
Oh, yes.
He remembers real well.
You know who again, this young man, Selvin Bryan. He don't forget nothing from here about 7 or 8 years.
Really?
Nothing at all. Sometimes he come here and I say, Selvin, what about so and so? He start to tell me from the beginning. But I don't have a retaining memory that way like they. But Gossi is very keen with that. And then Selvin. Selvin don't forget me.
Selvin was down this way?
Yes, yeah. Right up the beach. When you pass the base, cross it before I leave it, that Porchero one up that way. Selvin Bryan, big fellow.
Yeah, I don't know him, but I think maybe tomorrow I'll go up and see him.
Well, I can tell you directly where he is. When you pass where Bill, the fellow, the base then, go straight and cross the creek. As you cross the creek over, you look this and this hand. As you see, he's over there. He's the only person living there.
Okay. On Saturday?
The Indians are living just as you cross the creek on the left hand. But you turn right up to the right. That's where he is.
Okay.
He's a heavy man. Young man.
On Saturday, would he be there, do you suppose?
Yeah,
or will
I think so. He's at home there. Yes, you know, he's not an adventist. He'll be at home. But he don't go to work. I think he's at home.
He won't be going out to the bush?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, very seldom go to the farm late. He go and return early.
When you got your first farm, I was asking you, was it pure bush?
Oh, yes, it was woodland.
Did you have to pay for that, or did
you take the
woodland?
Just go and take it and work.
As soon as you were working on it, then it was yours?
Yes.
So how did you plant it? What did you plant it?
Planting banana, plantain, and cocoa. Well, provisions were that I planted right through in cocoa. Mm-hmm. When I came at those days, you know how much was the price of cocoa? 5 cents a pound.
Five colones
or a quintal of cocoa.
No, you mean 5 cents colones?
Sure.
For a quintal, oh my word.
It was for nothing. Mm-hmm. But I just had a determination to plant one day that it would worth something. And when my cocoa started to bear, I got 10 cents. Mm-hmm. But I was living off the planting banana and food, whatever I plant.
Did you plant other kinds of food too? Did you ever plant vegetables like cabbage and
things
like that?
Yes, I did.
What kind of vegetables did you plant?
I planted tomatoes, I planted cabbage, I planted turnip, I planted potato. Hmm. I plant tomato that we have 1 pound.
My word, one tomato, one pound.
One tomato, 1 pound.
So the soil is good for the
poor
tomato.
And you know, we're not down here, but right up when you go into, when you pass the cross and go for a little more right, right at the portrait over here, the Spanish man living over this side, over on that hand, that place was mine. It is for my son over, it was mine. I don't have nothing now.
Well, but I'm interested to know that these things grow, because most people now don't plant things like cabbage and tomato.
No. Plant cabbage at the big heads and the hard. Hmm.
And so those things grew well?
Oh, yes.
And up to this day, you don't plant anything like that now?
No, nothing at all. But before I took sick, I used to plant tomatoes and all that. I can't get labor and I can't work.
Yeah, it's
every day they cry, doctor tell me not to work, but I just move around. I have a man preparing a good size piece of land up the hill, you know, to plant beans. Mm-hmm. So I waited to see him today.
And do the beans grow well
now? Not yet. He's just preparing the soil for it.
And you never before grew beans?
Oh, yes.
It's always.
Oh, yes. Good. I plant beans, they're good. I like to plant grains, you know, beans and corn. I don't like rice.
Did you ever try rice?
Oh, yes. I scratch too much.
Scratch too much?
Yes.
How does it scratch
you? Yeah, some itching, or when you're picking it, it eats you.
Is that right? From something on the plant, or?
Yeah, it's from the plant.
So it's not so nice to harvest it. Well, so you got your farm in Old Harbor and got started there. Did you have a family then? Did you have your wife then?
Oh, yes, she died 5 years ago.
But did you meet her in Costa Rica, or?
Yeah, right here. Right in Olave.
But when you first came, when you had that first farm down there, were you alone then, or was your wife then?
No, I were alone. And I took our first mother, and we were together for some years, and she went away. And I never worry around, I just move around until I married this woman, just in Lushan. Mm-hmm. Just after I came down here, about 16 years ago, she died 5 years ago. Since that I don't, I have a cook all the time, and one go, another one come. Mm-hmm. Well, one knows he's gone to lemon juice from yesterday, I don't see her come back yet. But I hardly stay here, you know, I go up and down, I'm not working, and sometimes...
Well, now you have a chance to vacation.
Yeah, sometimes I'm in lemon, last month, early part of January I was in San Jose, spending 8 days. And I'm tired of the place, I go for a vacation.
In those old days, in those first days when you were down by Home Creek, what was Home Creek like? Were there very many people down that way?
No, not plenty. No more than about, well, we see about 10 livers were in Home Creek while I was living there.
And were they mostly Jamaican people, or?
Jamaican and Spaniard.
Some Spaniard too?
And everybody died out and gone away. Leaving 12 of us as Jamaican, and the other one died, that is Leopold's father. Very from that deep street. Did you know when the time that it became popular was when the companies came in to plant banana?
When was that?
That was let me see, 1930 or 31, something like that.
And that was United Fruit Company?
No, the Penrose Banana Company.
Penrose Banana Company?
Yes. They used to sell to the United Fruit Company.
And where did they plant banana?
The whole of country was in banana. Always you see Kokodi, and only my farm that was I still occupied, but all the balance of the land of Karakere were banana farms, whole of it.
Were they private farms or that company owned the whole?
The company owned practically. It was only Mason, was on the hill, right where the Chinese, where that fellow has a shop over on the hill.
Uh-huh.
But all the balance were company land. From the whole right back, pretty near out to the beach here, the company had banana. And all those cocoa farms you see on the Karakia are coming out here.
And was that for many years that they had the company?
Yes, the company came, I think, 1930 or 31. They remained about 8 or 9 years and banana began to fail and they even go. And then the people came in and take out sections by sections and plant cocoa.
I see.
Yes.
Was that land free then? If it could,
yeah,
they
yeah.
could go in and take.
No, they used to pay. Like I heard a part of it. They used to pay one cologne, one cologne per hectare, just to know that the company, that you know that the land is not yours, as the company.
Mm-hmm.
But quite a while now, the company turned it over to the government. They stopped. They don't hold with any banana and the company handles everything. So they have to pay a tax to the company.
So they had to pay a tax on their land?
No, we know that it is the quarters and it know.
Uh-huh.
Who has cocoa to pay the distribution? They pay to the government but not to the company. The company has nothing beside of it. The only place that the company has is over fields.
Uh-huh.
Going right down to Bridgefoot.
Uh-huh. What happened with the bananas?
It wasn't successful. Failed.
But was it because the land wasn't good or disease or
yes,
what happened?
Yes. A disease came in that called Cigatobo.
Cigatobo?
Yes. In Jamaica they call it leaf spot. All the leaves are spotted and holes through the leaves and they drop. The banana can't develop.
Hmm.
You see, they produce big bunches, but they can't develop.
Hmm.
You see some along the road there, their leaves are drying up all the time and the banana is still there, they can't full good. And if they do ripe, they're hard inside, they're not good.
So when that disease came, then the company left?
Yes, abandoned everything. And
then the people came in and paid one cologne every year?
Yes, for hectare, yes.
For hectare.
Until the company decided to turn it over to the government.
Mm-hmm. Where did those people come from?
The
people who came in
to plant the banana?
No, the people who came in to plant the cocoa.
Well, some of them were laborers on the farm, some from Lemon, all about.
Spaniard and Jamaican?
Spaniards and natives and
And then you stayed there right through those years? Were you down on Home Creek all that time?
Yes, I was over here.
And keep working your farm. Was that when you started liking farming?
Oh, yes.
You liked it from that time?
Oh, yes, from that time. Until now. I tried all kind of a business. I buy and sell animal. I butcher cows. I do everything. I opened a fresco shop twice. Wasn't successful.
Where did you have your
fresco
shop?
One was down Olava and one was right over here.
Hmm.
When I took 6 years before last, I leave this one, they break it twice. And I came back and I just give up the license and everything and I told Alfred to remove it and put it inside here, make it bigger for a big company.
Hmm.
No more business at all. I used to go to Alajuela every 2-3 months, buy cows and buy mules and everything, especially. I used to kill a lot of cows. I will be successful.
So farming seems like the best thing for you?
The best thing for me.
How about your sons or your other young people here? What would you tell them about what they should do with their future? Do you think that farming is the best way to make your living? Or?
No, I'm not interested.
Most of them not interested?
No. I have one in Lemon. I would do anything for him. To Alfred is living in Olava. In Old Creek, he can manage what he has up there, because I'm wearing cows and all kind of things up here. And I had almost farm here is what I had here, and I have one in Lemon. He used to call me from last year and from year before last until now. I don't see him now about 3 weeks. No, they don't, but they're not interested. All the young men that the old people that were living around here that had farms and they died. Their sons gone away, leave it and all the rest. Not interesting.
And so what will happen to those farms if the sons don't want them, then what happens?
Some of them, perhaps it's three or four brothers. One may remain and the other's gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interesting.
I wonder about that. I mean, it seems a problem to me because so many times the family, the father and even grandfather in the family want to keep the land, but then they get old and they die, and then somebody has to sell the land, and it's all gone then. It seems a shame to me.
Yes, I don't know. It's a problem with the young people. They don't. What they'll do, the young men around, they'll pick up a pot of cocoa for you. As they bake it now and measure it in the box, they get their money. But nothing near tomorrow or manana for them. I mean to prepare for tomorrow now. They're not interested. I have one in Lemon, you know, but God, if you could call. If you call me here, I wouldn't stay here. I just know and then I come and stay alone and go, why are you coming?
When did you build this house here? When did you come this side?
You love it. Let me see about all in the 30s up to 40 I was in Mount Creek, about 20 years since I came. We're going on coming.
But did you have business then in Old Harbor, or what brought you this side?
Well, you know why I came. I opened a little shop, a little fresco shop now, and I just decided I would stay around, and I bought a little farm because I like farm, and from there starting, and then I start to plant banana down here. After they stopped taking banana up there, we used to send banana by to Lemon.
Uh-huh.
The boats used to come there and buy it every week.
Those were boats from the company?
Yeah, no, private boats.
Mm-hmm.
Small launches, huh? So that's the way I come to live here, because I've been planting banana. I like to plant banana, but it's quick money. Quicker than cocoa. No weather prevents banana, must be a breeze blow.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I came down here. And I had Mehtabi farms. I have about 10 hectares up here that I turn it in pasture. But it's abandoned now because I don't know, I can't manage cows now. So I just go with a piece of it, a cutting right now to plant beans about a half, 3/4 hectare.
Can you sell those beans right here in Puerto Viejo?
Yes, right here. A man that cut out that work on a piece of my land up there last year, he got a good amount of beans and he sold it right out here. The shops buy it out.
It seems a good crop because then you don't have to worry about carrying things.
No.
It's all right here.
You only want to know you have beans. This is very dear. You know, I bought beans in Sanu for 2 colones and 65 cents to plant.
Mm-hmm.
2 colones, 65 cents. Mm-hmm. Then here is 285.
Did you ever go out on the sea? Weren't some of the people from here made a living somehow up and down on the sea as captain of boats or anything
no,
like that?
No, I never. I don't like it.
You didn't prefer the sea?
I don't like sea. I used to see sea.
Did you?
Yes.
On these boats going back and forth from Limon in
yes.
The old days, you get seasick?
Everything was boat. You all boat here every Tuesday, sometimes 3 times should have been, 2-3 boats. You carry your cocoa, go to Lemon, away from the bananas that the company come and buy, but your merchandise, you have to go to Lebanon and buy it. Who want to? Or buy it at the shop here. I've been having regular boats.
Mm-hmm.
Boats regular.
What kind of boats were those?
Little gasoline boats, steam boats.
Steam boats?
Yes.
And do they carry plane passengers?
Oh yes, all passengers. At that time, you know the difficulty of going to Pinellas to take a train? We used to leave here in the morning, right from here to Estrella Bar, to take a boat to go up to Boni, up to the station and take the train.
And you go walking from here?
Yes.
Walking or on horse from
here? Well, sure.
From here down to
Estrella Bar? We don't have a horse up to walk. I sleep in Covita and next morning get up and go. We used to have plenty of problem to get out.
Sure.
Then after that, after the company started to plant banana, it was much easier because we had trunk car.
Was it that same company that planted bananas that made the tram car?
Yes, yes, the tram line. Yes.
I see.
Well, during the time when the little engine used to come and take banana, they had a tram car. I mean the people, because I had a mule and car there myself. Mm-hmm. I was living up here.
Did you make some money doing that?
Yes, a passenger.
You built the cart and tie a mule to it and then...
A car now, a mule droid.
Mm-hmm.
And you have three or four benches on that trunk car now that the passengers sit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to Pinners from there, you cross over the river.
How far did that tram line go?
That tram went a good way over going to Lake Eagle, going to Boston. It didn't go as far as Fields, but it passed Cruce.
Mm-hmm. And did it come out this side to Puerto Viejo too?
No, not far from here.
Down here?
Not far from out on the beach, not this side, but that side wasn't far.
Hmm.
It was about a half hour walking to here.
Hmm.
But that was our transportation. The car from here, passengers, they bring the passengers in London and you have to go to Manchania, wherever you belong to, you walk it. You're right. But you could walk regular every other day if you want to go to Pinellas. You could go every day because you had daily trains. And you go to Pinellas and then you buy your food stuff and come in.
Was the tram car daily too?
Yes.
But before that it was pure boat?
Ah, yes. Before that was boat, or otherwise it means you have to walk or ride it to Estrella, to the Barmouth. And then take a boat that's belonging to Boni and go to the railroad and take the train from there. Oh, there was a lot of problem it was. But imagine that rain or shine, you have to go out in before day.
Yeah.
You have to get there in time to take that boat, or otherwise it's evening.
Mm.
But from here, well, we've been having lunch here regular, but I never considered.
So did you prefer to walk?
Yes, prefer to ride.
Really? You ride down on the horse all the time?
Yeah, yes.
And then what, you tied your horse down by the Estrella Bar someplace?
No, not
far. What did you do with the horse then?
No, leave it here until you call somebody. You coming from Le Mans today, I ride and go there and give you my horse and you come home. Tomorrow you'll send it or anybody coming out the day after, whenever I'm coming, you come and meet me.
I see. So it didn't stay down there that whole time?
No, you don't have to remain long. But after we got the tram line in here, well, it was just a stone stove.
Hmm.
Yes. But today is not so.
Today it's
fine. But after that we had the base that you could go to Le Mans three times per day, per week. Two trips sometimes per day from here to Lemon on the plane.
On the plane?
Yes.
When was that?
That was some years ago. Right over you see where Bill is living there, that base, a little plane, where no little plane used to pitch there.
Now, what, that was some kind of a company plane or a private plane?
Yes, it was the same company that their plane that is going over the road there.
It's going up to 6 hours?
Yes.
The one that goes up to 6 hours?
Yes, to 6 hours.
And it used to come from?
The moon. Here and go over and come back and pitch and take passengers and go to the moon.
About three times a week, you say?
Yeah, sometimes every day. As long as there are passengers, it comes.
And my goodness. How much did they charge for that? Was it?
First it was 35 colones. Four passengers.
Four passengers they could carry. And that was at about what time? I didn't know they ever had a plane at that.
Yes. You see the basin right there?
Yeah, I see it.
Yes, but he just didn't want to come and refuse of landing here and say that it is not licensed, the base not licensed, and this and that. And he preferred to go.
Did he build the base himself?
No, not he built it. It's the oil company built it, Petrolero built it. They built it for their own use.
When was that?
I don't even remember the year, but we about from, that was little after the water worked, about in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in the 40s when the plane was here. The base was occupied by one only plane. The last thing that came here is the helicopter that comes here on. This one I heard one, I thought he was going to pitch here, but he didn't.
They finally stopped carrying passengers because they said that it wasn't a licensed
plane
base. And so from then they stopped it. No, I never knew that you had such good transportation. And something that people in Coweta never had, only Old Harbor.
No, in Coweta, when the time is very calm, they used to pitch up this place they call Little Bay.
Huh?
And the beach.
Really?
But it's very seldom because the sea is all the time bringing in logs and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
They were building a big plane base in Puerto Vargas. Started and everything, but they're having a bad time with the swamps. Whenever the sea, the creeks are black, the whole place was underwater. Well, probably...
That was the Petrolero too? That was
No, the log company.
The log company.
Of course, if they had stayed, they would dump it enough and build a good base. So they come. See, they have, I don't know where they have a big house in Puerto.
Yeah.
They're not here. They just have a problem with the government and they just go.
You had plenty of companies come in here for a short time and then leave out again. The log company and the Petroleros and the banana company.
Yes. Banana was the first. Petrolero was the first Sinclair oil company. That is enough years ago, 20 or 30 odd years ago. And then after that, the other oil companies they came. Sinclair oil company was the first one. But the others, they never stay here long. They've been drilling here from there, they go to Talamanca on a boat and just leave them their marks and gone away.